are going to take the LCA issue first, and that is item number...
3.3.
3.3. And a little bit of clarification about the process for giving comments and testimony. How this is going to work today is that we're going to introduce the agenda item. We'll say the number, give just a very brief description, and then we've got the sign-up sheets over there on the table next to the door. If you are interested in talking about the particular agenda item, we're going to take that right after the introduction, and then we'll listen to the information, and then the commissioners are going to discuss it after all the comments and everything. So if you are interested in any of the topics, if you could get your name on the list, and if you are interested in the CAP and the LCA, one, go ahead and do that first, and then we'll get started in just a second. Melissa, do you want to introduce it, and then we'll start with the testimony?
Oh, I'm calling the meeting of the licensure committee to order. And we are on agenda item 3.3, license of conditional assignment. It is an action item, and Lynn Beaton is actually going to give just a brief description of what we're talking about, and then we'll go through the list of folks who've signed up to speak.
This agenda item has been on the commission meeting for the last two meeting times as well. And the concept is to move the current conditional assignment permit to a new license, because it isn't at this time really an official license. The new license, what we are referring to as the license of conditional assignment, is outlined here. Because there were a number of issues being raised by school districts, I have been soliciting feedback from districts over the last couple of months, first by email, and then we met physically with a group last week. And so the memo in front of you is my attempt to capture the issues that I have been hearing for a few months and then to address those specifically point by point. So sounds as if first we might hear from districts or from other speakers as well, and then if there's anything remaining, I can address those questions at that time if you would like.
So, Chair Scott, who's first?
All right. Maria, and when you come up to the front, if you'd please say your name, who you're affiliated with, and so we have that.
Good morning. My name is Maria Araiza. I am the personnel specialist for the Salem-Keizer School District for the License Department. And thank you for the opportunity to go over the new process again, Lynn. We received the memo. Thank you. And I just have a question on number 16. If you make this a true license, number 16 says that you are considering the step out or the suspension period, but we don't have that with regular licenses. So how do we hold teachers accountable for completing the requirements to get that endorsement added? Number three, we still have until October 1st for submission of all the existing conditional assignment permits, and that is not going to change. So thank you for that. That gives us leeway to make sure that our students are being taken care of instructionally if there's a need to make changes to the schedules. On number five, on your last sentence, it will take time to build an electronic licensing system that can be reviewed, that can review any existing endorsement, determine if a new endorsement is allowed, and then determine if a 1 year or 3 year period is appropriate. I do believe that you currently have that in place. I can go into your website and see what are the requirements to add a reading endorsement per se. Right now, I know that the reading endorsement takes 21 credit hours of graduate level coursework for me to get that endorsement added. So that information is already on your system. So when you say that it will take time to build that, how long are we talking about? and what happens in the interim time when we submit a request and you go through the process of letting the candidate know what requirements are needed. On the number six, adding a checkbox for districts to indicate that they want the educator to know up front of the district's willingness to pay the fee. Otherwise, districts can always choose to reimburse educators after educators have paid. This would not require any changes to TSPC processes. Some districts currently, if they place you on a conditional assignment permit, they pay for that, but not all districts do. I know Salem Kaiser doesn't, and there's also language here that says that the licensing belongs to the educator. So they would have to pay for that license, not the district. If this becomes a license, then the educator is responsible for all costs for that license. I do believe that this would be something that we may have to consider bargaining as to who will pay the cost, and that would create another timely delay for districts to get this approved. I would like a little bit more clarification on the statement here that says, however, other reasons for not being eligible for an LCA will take longer to build into the online system. What does that mean? If we are putting somebody on a conditional assignment permit, we know that we're doing that because they don't have what it takes for us to instructionally meet the needs of the student. We already know that. The educator is also made aware of that when we say, you know, we need to assign you to teach one period of math or two periods of math. They don't have that endorsement already. So we know that, and they are aware of that. So when we submit that and then you go through the process and determine that they're not eligible, what does that mean? On number seven, the last bullet, the system indicating exactly what the educator will need to add to do to add the new endorsement to a particular license. When we place somebody currently, when we place somebody on a conditional assignment permit, we tell them that they need to either go and get endorsed, they will require a program, if it's a reading, or an ESOL classroom, which is for Salem Kaiser, primarily the volume of CAPS that we have right now. That requires a program, so we tell them that. So by the time they sign their paperwork that we require of them to submit to us, they know that. If we go to the electronic system, and I'm just playing this scenario out, we tell somebody, you need to be, we need to place this or co-sponsor you for an LCA. We do not know what the requirements are at that point, and not until you verify that, because TSPC is the licensing agency. You're the final authority on what the requirements are. The teacher says, yes, we'll go ahead and do that. They have verbally agreed to do so. They have gone and signed yes. But by the time they get that information from TSPC as to what exactly that would be required of them, and they find out that they have to spend $10,000, $14,000, $20,000 to get a program, and they said, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. What happens then? We have already have the teacher in the classroom for a period of time. What happens at that point? Number 13 is the similar case where you say that this issue was not decided during the meeting, and we're talking about at what point does the educator get notified of what the requirements are going to be. Do they get notified right at first when they submit and you ask them to sign off on saying, yes, I agree to be placed on a CAP? Or at what point does that notification process happens, and how long will that take? Thank you. Those are all my questions that I have, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's see. Chuck?
Good morning. Chuck White, Executive Director of the Oregon School Personnel Association. My comments are more global in the sense that I wanted to let you know kind of the feeling, I believe, of our membership. And for the most part, I think folks are willing to work with these changes, but are kind of happy the way things are at the current time. We recognize that there's this legal question in terms of being required that this should be a license. But in reading the materials, again, I sense that there's maybe some questions as to whether that's true or not. I think that needs to be resolved so that we know that this is, in fact, a mandate. I know that the current system, there have been concerns about districts implementing a cap without the teacher's notice or knowledge. My sense there, again, is that may be true in some instances, but it would be not the large majority of districts. And if those districts aren't following proper protocol in terms of the current cap, then, again, those districts should be communicated with directly. The other concern, of course, as you make changes, is how's that going to impact the agency in terms of resources? We all know we're in a time of limited resources, which are coming even more limited, and those changes, again, would hopefully not add to the concerns that way, but again, I think that has to be a consideration. And I think the bottom line I want you to realize, too, is that in talking with districts, it's not that we aren't willing to move forward and make this change. We're willing to work and do so, but we want to make sure that the impact on districts and teachers alike are not a hardship.
Thank you. And the last one that I've got on my list, Jason.
No. It has to be turned on, I guess. There we go. My name is Jason Peterson. I represent the Beaverton School District. Like to just sort of paint a picture for the commission about how CAPS are sort of used right now. There was a lot of information in your docket about the history of CAPS and how it sort of evolved. I think from the school perspective, how CAPS are used right now are principals are responsible for their main schedule, and when they are trying to fill enough courses and have enough options for kids to be able to actually have a cohesive education, sometimes educators are asked to teach outside of their endorsement area. We appreciate the way that we can do that with just a period, and it doesn't have to go through the CAP process, and recognize a need for when it's a larger period of time to actually have sort of a license in place or a conditional assignment in place. But the flexibility, I think, is the key thing from a school perspective that really needs to maintain with whatever decisions the commission makes, either maintaining the CAP or going on to an LCA. In light of that perspective, seeing with the current economic conditions, I agree with Chuck that the flexibility is going to be even more important now. So when you're considering this, thinking about your timing of when you implement the change, if you do decide to go forward, would be super, super important. So a couple of considerations. The cost issue that's been brought up, I would like to challenge the commission to really consider this as a no-cost option, to maintaining it as a no-cost option. I know some of the rules, be it statute or your own rules, require charging a fee for licensure. So rather than just saying, okay, well, since a fee is required, we're going to have to assess one, maybe looking at changing rules or advocating for a way to maintain a no-cost option, even if you do proceed with a change. I know another argument's been made that this would at least include it into the order that licenses are processed, because one, there's always been a big delay. I think 3 years ago there was a huge delay, and that these are sort of a gotten to last in terms of the process of how it works. And I guess I'd ask if that could just be a choice to include them, even if it wasn't charged, include them in the same processing on the order that they're received. That seems like that could be an option to address that as well, even without charging. Number three, educators not knowing when a cap is issued. I know in Beaverton, and I can only speak to our procedure, anytime a cap is issued, the educator actually signs a contract saying that they have a cap. We don't issue a cap until we have a signature on that paper. So even with that in place, we have had educators say, oh gosh, I didn't fully understand or I didn't fully know. I think that's part of human nature. So regardless if that's formalized in a response from TSBC in a letter on their account, that really currently happens with the current process, and there are still educators that say, gosh, I didn't know. So I don't think that's a really great reason to change an entire process for the few who aren't fulfilling their commitment. We definitely, as a district, want to take a more involved role, and have actually, we, in addition to just the plan that's signed, we actually have them fill a program plan, which is actually an entire sort of list of what they need to do in order to get the cap fulfilled or to add the endorsement. So we'd be happy to work with the commission if they have advice on how to better do that and how to better maintain that, but don't see it as a reason to change from a cap to a license of conditional assignment. Two last things, as reviewing the documents that you have, I know part of the district document that Lynn prepared said something about grandfathering people in, and that people who are currently on caps would maintain caps or be grandfathered in. It was not exactly clear, and then when I read the rule, it appears as if people who are currently on caps are going to be transitioned to an LCA, maybe not changing the rules that are in place, but that their actual cap would change to a license of conditional assignment. So I'd like the commission to directly address whether it's going to be grandfathered in and to what extent. And then also fully address the legal rendering or the legal question that OEA presented to the commission as well, so that we can get sort of a response on that and more clarity on if this is even a legal necessity to move on to a license format instead of a conditional assignment permit format. Lastly, if you do decide to make the transition, I would like to just also advocate for the online systems that you say are basically available immediately, and then you're going to decide on an implementation timeline. I'd like the implementation timeline to actually be dependent on those online processes being in place. For example, paying online seems like a really critical aspect to this. And if the commission approves a timeline, but then due to other things outside of the control, the paying online doesn't happen, that would be a real hindrance to the flexibility. If people actually have to contact by phone and pay, while that seems like an immediate process, in reality for our teachers, it's just not. It can take even up to several weeks to actually finally connect and pay with a credit card. So online payment and the other online processes that you have in your documents that say will happen immediately, if you do transition, making that dependent on that would be great. Also, clear communication. I saw in your mission statement that clear communication with educators is part of that mission statement. So I'd ask how you're going to be clearly communicating with educators, in addition to just posting on the website. If people are grandfathered in, is that going to be communicated directly with them via letter or email? And how is that going to be also communicated with administrators? Administrators can be disciplined if their licensure isn't correct of their staff. And so if you do implement a change, even as soon as this next school year, that's going to be a really important way or important consideration is how are you going to educate administrators so that they can do their job, and how can you as a commission support them in that? Thank you for your time.
All right. Is there anybody else that's out in the audience that would like to make comments? All right. So I think at this point that we'll close the comment portion. And Melissa, you can go over and take over the conversation with the commission.
Okay. We have a list of several questions and issues that have been raised to address. Lynn is feverishly preparing to address them. But I wanted to also ask if licensure committee has any questions. And you're on licensure as well? Nothing from licensure. Okay. I'm going to let Lynn address some of these things because they may be similar issues and questions that commissioners hold. And then if other commissioners still have questions, we'll go from there. So.
Thank you. In trying to lump some of the issues that I was just hearing and then others that we've heard in the past month or so together, to address some of those. Let's take the cost issue first. That issue, we do understand that, particularly for those districts which issue a number of caps, that could be a real concern, whether the district decides to pay that amount or whether that cost is directly passed on to the educator. For that reason, we have we're proposing to lower that amount again to $25 for that initial license, rather than the initial 100 that then went down to 50, and now we're proposing the 25. In terms of some of the issues that I think we will see while processing, I really do understand the concerns about making sure that the online processing is effective and is in place as quickly as possible. Because to address Maria's concern or the question about, but you've already got materials online right now that explain how what you do to get a specific endorsement. Yes, we do, but what we don't have is this. What we can't do for you right now online is say, but you hold this kind of a license and you want to move to this one. In some cases, you're going to have to do a program, but in others, you wouldn't, depending upon what that first license is. So that's the piece that we cannot right now do electronically. And as a person, I'm 7 months into this now, I've sat down on the floor of my kitchen and laid out all the little pieces and realized this is a bit of a headache to try to do it electronically, at least quickly. So right now, that information is in the heads of my evaluators. And so they really need to do that right now as humans looking at that information. But you're right, we're gonna have a delay initially because you're not gonna be able to get instant answers from everybody about exactly what it's gonna take to be able to add that endorsement instantly. So over time, that's what I wanna get online so that you could plug in. Someone has this kind of an endorsement, what's it going to take for them to then be able to come out with this new endorsement? So that's really the question about the online issue. We do understand that it's a rare occurrence where teachers probably genuinely don't know or weren't at least told if they had a cap or that they needed to address that. We're actually hoping that moving this to a license will help with that problem, because we plan on building in, and this can be done up front, a system that will notify the educator electronically and say, your district would like you to be eligible and to accept this new endorsement. Are you okay with that? So they're gonna have to say yes or no. And so we're not gonna have the problems that we hear all the time. Trust me, we know that most of the time they might not be telling us the exact truth, but we do very frequently hear, and I remember getting this a lot when I was doing discipline, I didn't even know I had a cap. So that's why I didn't go take the classes or look into it, because no one told me. So whether there's a cost associated or not, moving this to a more formal process where they actually have to formally accept is something that I think at least is a good idea. And we'll hopefully be able to provide that kind of information. Okay, fair enough. Why are we doing this? So the question of why. And the initial question of what's really the primary purpose is a legal issue. It's a legal concern and a reason that when someone is allowed to teach something, they are being given a right. They're holding a property right. And so the information that we've been provided with is, well, then that should most likely be a license. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, call it a license, assign a fee, assign a process, put it in line with all the other applications that you're receiving, and process it, and so that you're actually issuing that right. So that was what targeted or triggered us looking into this at the first place. I will say that as the new director of licensure in this position, I was concerned because the caps do wait right now in a little pile, actually an ever-growing pile, for everything else to get done before the evaluators tackle them, because everything else has fees attached, everyone else has this other expectation attached that you're going to issue it as quickly as you can. And so when you've got this sort of beast sitting out there in a pile, it's often the last thing we get to, and that's probably not really fair to the people wanting to hold that. Do I know that this will initially slow us down a bit? You bet. Putting some of the caps or the LCAs into line with everything else, I think will initially be a bit of an issue for my staff. But right now, truthfully, I've only got one person who has this information in her head, and I would like to get all five of the evaluators with this information to try to speed it up. So that's sort of another issue in terms of kind of the practicality of what we'd be looking at. Raul or Vicky, any other things that you would like to address in terms of the legalities of really why we decided to look into this option in the first place?